Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking nearly 50 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Where do policymakers turn when they need objective research to make decisions for Alaska's future? For 65 years, the Institute of Social and Economic Research, ICER, at UAA, has been a trusted source of in-depth study that business and political leaders have relied on to set the course for our state. What milestones has ICER achieved, and what comes next for this revered institution? ICER leaders, past and present, join us today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. You may think that economic research isn't your thing. Maybe you don't light up and embrace wonky details of every study. But at least some of the topics ICER has tackled are surely relevant to you in your life. If you're a commercial fisherman, you want data to make a wise decision before you invest in a new boat or permit. Maybe you're considering a new career and want occupation studies to guide your decisions. If you're an oldster like me, you may want to read up on the cost of healthcare in Alaska. ICER has specialized in research that's directly relevant to our lives and our communities. It lights the way for lawmakers, home builders, parents, and patients. Today, we're highlighting the 65th anniversary of the Institute of Social and Economic Research to learn more about how this nonpartisan work has helped shape policy throughout our economy, business, culture, and healthcare sectors. Here to help us understand the importance of this work is past ICER director and former Alaska Lieutenant Governor Fran Ulmer. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here in the studio. Also in the studio is ICER's current but outgoing director, Professor Diane Hirschberg. Hello.
Good morning.
And Brock Wilson is a research assistant professor of economics at ICER. Welcome, Brock. Thanks all of you for being here and in the studio with us today.
Thank you.
So to start us off, you know, professional courtesy makes me want to refer to you as Lieutenant Governor, Ms. Ulmer, but is it okay for the ICER discussion if I refer to you as Fran?
That would be great. Please do.
All right. Okay, Fran, and then Diane, please follow up here. In 1961, when ICER was formed, it was at the urging of Dr. George Rogers. That's not a name I was familiar with. So who was he?
Oh, my golly. George Rogers was a fabulous economist who lived in Juneau, and I knew both George and his wife for many, many years. They were active in the community even long after they had retired. I think what really drove George was his belief that better decisions would be made about how to run Alaska as a new state if there was actually some analysis, some research, some way of understanding how this place was unique, how it differed from other places, and what lessons could be learned by looking at states in the lower 48 that might give us guidance. And so George was very good at finding funding outside of Alaska to help this young state do a better job of making decisions. And he was the person who hired Vic Fisher to be the first director of ICER.
Oh, interesting. And, you know, continuing on just a little bit about Dr. Rogers, as you noted, he wanted citizens and policymakers to have clarity to make good economic decisions. Did he model this on similar research organizations, or was this a new concept in the 60s?
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. Diane, I'll turn to you.
I don't think it's an entirely new idea because next week we're going to be joined by universities across the country that have organizations like ICER. We're actually one of the older ones in the U.S., so I think there were a few, but I'm not sure that there were many models to look at. But he definitely had a vision and relationships with legislators who understood what he was arguing for was actually really important. I think in part because we were not only young, but far away. So we had to be figuring this stuff out and developing our own capacity to answer these questions.
Mm-hmm. Before we talk a little bit more about your past role as ICER director, Fran, do you think ICER would have made it this many decades if not for the advocacy of former Constitutional Convention delegate and lawmaker and ICER's first director, the late Vic Fisher?
Well, one can never discount the impact that Vic Fisher had on the state of Alaska. He was a powerhouse of both ideas and persuasive capacity. I mean, he was really good at getting people to listen to what he had to say. And I think it's because he was himself so good at listening to others to be able to really synthesize not only the problems and challenges we faced, but potential solutions. So Vic had a huge influence. But I don't think that the legislature and the university regents at everybody would have continued to support ICER the way they have for all these years if it wasn't useful, if it wasn't relevant, if it wasn't impactful. And the fact that ICER's research has always been so closely aligned with the major public policy questions facing Alaska is what made it valuable and made the investment in this university research institution worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. And so, Diane, do you want to follow up a little bit about Vic's importance to ICER? He was such a big figure.
Well, I think Vic understood where Alaska's place was. And when you look at him getting National Science Foundation money in the 1960s, Ford Foundation money and NSF money, to look at, they called it Man in the Arctic, to understand that Alaska was creating the U.S. status as an Arctic nation, to understand the opportunities that it meant to be in a place that for so many in the lower 48 just seemed remote and like possibly a mistake. And here he was showing that, no, we were actually critical and foreshadowing where we sit now. With our recognition that we are really at the center of a lot of this geopolitical conflict that's happening because of where we sit, because of our proximity to Japan, China, Russia. And Vic understood that. He understood that international relation and location that we had in a way that I think very few of us to this day understand. I will say he also had the foresight to hire Lee Gorsuch. So he, as he stepped out of being ICER director, positioned us to continue to have this nonpartisan, high-quality research presence and to really focus on what are the key questions the state needs to answer in order to be sustainable.
I was thinking as you were all talking about the early formations and the importance of having research to research to form policy and help create the backbone for this brand new forming state that was also, once oil came into being, was sort of drunk with money. And I think back on, we've done some programs in the past about some of the past boondoggles that the state engaged in and some of the outrageous, the city under a dome and things like that. And I wonder if it hadn't been for ICER, you know, bringing some realistic and very importantly, nonpartisan research to ideas that people put forward. Any thoughts about whether we might have had a lot more wild spending in those days when there was so much money and people thought, hey, we're never going to need taxes. Don't worry about anything.
Well, don't forget Jay Hammond was governor at that time. And Jay was very worried about overspending. And he was very worried about the sudden impact that the pipeline would actually leave behind some things that maybe weren't so good for the state of Alaska. Mm-hmm. So he created something called the Growth Policy Council, and ICER helped with some of the in-depth analysis that was done by the Growth Policy Council that actually helped think through alternative scenarios in terms of spending and in terms of encouraging the growth that maybe would be too much for this small population to be able to really handle, manage, and effectively improve the quality of life, as opposed to just being more, bigger, bigger. And so it was kind of that combination of having a governor who was very concerned about how fast we were growing, and having ICER and other entities, frankly, not the only one, that really wanted to understand how other places that had sudden booms, whether it was from oil or from something else, could handle it in a way that actually managed over time the value of that resource, which of course is part of why the constitutional amendment to create the permanent fund in 1976 went forward.
Mm-hmm. So fascinating to think of how differently things may have unfolded without that assistance of some really stellar research and smart minds thinking much more broadly and into the future than in just in the moment of having so much money available. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about ICER, the Institute of Social and Economic Research, as it turns 65. It's its 65th anniversary this year. In the studio with me today is Fran Ulmer. Fran is the former Lieutenant Governor of Alaska and a former director of ICER. Diane Hirschberg is the current director of ICER, although the outgoing director. And also in the studio with us is Brock Wilson. Brock is a professor of economics at ICER. When it was founded in 1961, the name was different, the Institute of Social, Economic, and Governmental Research. Do you know why the name changed and why governmental was dropped? Any clue about that?
I don't, but it doesn't surprise me that that was an important piece of what George Rogers was envisioning. It was about how does the government evolve in combination with the new statehood and the new economy and a transition to a very different place over time. So I think it was particularly important at the beginning to be focused on how do we structure the agencies, how do we structure the governmental pieces of this new state. And perhaps at some point the Board of Regents decided that wasn't necessary anymore and it transitioned. But I don't know that piece of the history.
No, yeah. I think this is a good question to ask Lee Gorsuch, because I do believe it was under Lee's leadership. And it, you know, ICER has moved physical locations. It's moved from being an entity sitting at the University of Alaska to briefly at University of Alaska Fairbanks to University of Alaska Anchorage. And so it may simply have been an artifact of that, but it's a good question to ask Lee.
Well, maybe he'll call in while we're talking and let us know. I wondered if maybe it was dropped because of the fact that it is does such a broad sweep of research, not just for government, but for businesses and for others. And so maybe that was the idea. Who knows? I want to get you in here now, Brock. Thank you for your patience. You said in an earlier interview that you wanted to work for ICER because of the role of providing information and answering questions for people regardless of who asks. Talk about why that appealed to you. And are there other research organizations doing similar work, or does ICER stand out in that way in your mind?
Thanks again for asking. I think a little bit of background about myself might help here, which is
sure.
I've been at ICER for about a year and a half now, and prior to ICER, I was in a graduate program at the University of Oregon. And then during my PhD, I was working on research related to what the effect of better pensions or better retirement packages would do for workers. And so I'd spent 3 years putting together this paper. And at the end of those 3 years, I was applying to jobs and I was doing interviews. And I remember going to a couple different places in Chicago and DC and presenting. And it was just kind of funny because I would present this paper and it would go, you know, I found in Alaska that if you increase, if you give workers better compensation or better pensions, they stick around. And most places were like, okay. And why it's so funny to me is that I came up to Anchorage and I had my interview and I was presenting my paper to everyone in the room, you know, all of the ICER faculty, all of the Department of Econ faculty, and every step of the way as I was presenting them to them, they had questions and they were like, what policy would you do? And my role is never to, but for me, you know, to provide this insight was really exciting because I actually had an opportunity to actually help or, you know, provide information that was actually being used. And so for me, that was a very exciting thing to be doing, is to take these tools that I've learned and actually be able to use them to provide information for people that wanted to think about how to use to be more effective. I think that there are other places that are doing this sort of research, but I think ICER is unique. I think ICER is the brand name of it, how important it is to the state. That was one of the things that really drew me here. I think that there are other entities that do it, and they'd probably do it very well. But you know, here, I think ICER just plays such an integral role in providing information. That is a big reason for why I'm so excited to be here and working for ICER.
It's amazing to me how Alaska has made some political and policy missteps in the past, but has also done some amazingly progressive and smart things put in place. And ICER is a good example of, you know, seeing that vision for the future and really wanting good research for policy. Fran, were you the first woman to lead ICER?
Yes. Right. And after my tenure, Heather Hudson and then Diane. So there have been three out of the roughly dozen people who have headed ICER.
Yeah. And ICER formed just a few years after statehood. Talk about some of what you know about the early research projects that it was looking at in that era.
Oh, golly. You know, when I think about the research, I think about the people who were doing the work. I think about Gunnar Knapp and his amazing work on fisheries that not only helps Alaskans, but helps people up and down the coasts of the U.S., because the Pacific Northwest, similar issues, salmon, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think about Scott Goldsmith and the work that Scott has done unraveling the disconnect between Alaska's spending and its income, his notion of the three-legged stool that actually explains Alaska's economy. You know, one-third oil, one-third federal government, one-third everything else. I mean, when people hear that, all of a sudden they say, wow, that's really unusual. Well, yes, Alaska is, and Scott helped people understand that. I think about education research and the research Diane has done in understanding how you publicly fund public education in a state that is as dispersed as ours is, with very different challenges all over the place. I think about the early work that people like Lee Gorsuch and Jack Cruz and Tom Morehouse did, something that was called SLICA, the Survey of Living Conditions in the Arctic, which was an international Arctic comparison of how satisfied are people who are living in a variety of places in the Arctic about their lives, about their healthcare, about their education, and about their sense of efficacy, the sense of they have some control over their lives. And I mean, it was Greenland, it was Canada, it was Iceland and Alaska. You know, it's so diverse when you look across the range of issues and the range of expertise that has evolved at ICER because of those many, many years. A platform has been built upon which people like Brock get to expand it further. And that's what's made ICER kind of unique. Among other things, it's just had a range of issues that were important to Alaskans and to the Arctic. And over time, that's been built upon year after year after year. So there's the depth of history and understanding of a place that's pretty unique.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you so much. That was a beautiful explanation of some of the immense amount of work that ICER has conducted and the importance of it. Another area, of course, is the oil and gas industry, and ICER was front and center as the oil industry was developing here. Were studies commissioned by the industry or by state leaders, or is that, do you have any sense of that history, Diane?
I'm going to say yes. Yes, both, and because I think there was also federal funding that came in. And if I look at Matt Berman, who is our longest serving faculty member now, he came up to do oil and gas studies, I believe. I know he was involved in that quite a bit. And so his funding, he's had funding from the state, from National Science Foundation. So these questions have come from many places. And actually, back to Vic, Vic organized a AAAS, so American Association for the Advancement of Science, conference back in 1970 that was looking at the potential impact of the oil industry. There's a wonderful picture we have of him. If people look for the brochure about Vic Fisher at the University of Alaska that we produced. And he's with Ted Stevens before he was a senator, when he was still in the state legislature. And I think maybe with Wally Hickel. I mean, he was, you know, talking with our early leaders who understood that something very transformative was about to happen. And so they held a conference and had something like 2,000 people come here across industry and policymakers to understand and plan for what eventually became the pipeline and the structures that we have in place today.
Just fascinating. Brock, give us some insight into your current work. Do you choose your topics? Are they chosen for you? What steps do you take to get started?
That's a great question. When I originally came up, I was hired having done my paper on, you know, better pensions, better, you know, worker retention. And that was a really big catalyst for me because that was sort of the topic that was ongoing and thinking about for public workforce in Alaska, you know, this defined benefit versus defined contribution, sort of what that does. And that's been very much an important large segment of my research, is sort of helping thinking about, you know, what does that look like? Can we get better sort of information on that trade-off? And so that's been a big part of my research, but it's also been sort of evolving kind of as things go. Last year, I had some work on Medicaid. I also had some research helping out with the fiscal options policy. So it's sort of one of the great things I think about ICER when I think about the research is I think everybody has some sort of previous expertise that they've worked on, but there's also the opportunity to really engage with others and expand your horizon and think about other research areas. And that's been particularly exciting for me because, you know, for example, Brett Watson is, you know, great professor, understands a lot about oil and gas. And there's been opportunity for us to sort of collaborate and think about how to interact sort of public workforce and oil and gas, or, you know, just sort of those intersections of research. And so I guess broadly that it's kind of evolving as I go, which has been kind of why I love working at ICER. It's exciting to constantly sort of be at the frontier of thinking about new ideas and new concepts.
And you study labor economics, correct?
Yes.
So talk about some of those studies related to that so that people kind of get an idea of what that work involves. And what have you studied and who asked for it?
So I think the first paper, my original job market paper, the sort of high-level gist of the paper was that federal workers in Alaska got about 20% better benefits, and that decreased quits by about 30%. One of the interesting things in that paper is that we didn't see increases in changes to those being hired, which is kind of interesting because if you know, give workers better compensation, you'd think that the type of worker that would select in or work for that agency would change. But it seems that retirement benefits operate a little differently, that maybe when workers are looking at jobs, they might look at the salary, but they may not pay as much close attention to something like the retirement package. We're still sort of evolving in that space and thinking about research. And so that's one of the areas that I've been particularly interested in, is actually doing some experimental work and thinking about, well, what are people looking at when they look at job postings? Like, what is it that they're actually gleaning from that that posting, and what are they actually taking away? Since then, I've done some work recently on the defined benefit versus defined contribution pension plan, and that was just funded by ICER. Other than that, I believe that's sort of the big research area I've been working on, and so.
Very important area.
Yeah. And if I could just add, that ties pretty directly to a public policy question that a lot of leaders, both private sector and public sector, are concerned about, which is, how do you retain people? Mm. How do you make sure that you are offering opportunities for Alaskans? Because as you know, we have a pretty high percentage of non-resident workers in some job categories.
Yes.
So the question of incentives, both to apply for a job, but also to stay in that job, is very clearly related to an overarching public policy dilemma in Alaska of how do we make sure Alaskans get good jobs and how do we keep them in those jobs, particularly nurses and teachers and other areas where it's pretty important to the quality of life and ultimately to the economy. I might also note that in at least in the old days, and I don't know if that's true anymore, legislators would actually tee up questions that they wanted ICER to consider. And again, way back in the days when the legislature had some extra money, they would actually put money in for a topic area that they felt was incredibly important and relevant to the times. I think education was one of those, if I'm not mistaken, Diane.
Yes. So, and I think this is, I'm going to bounce also off of what Brock said. When he talked about having some funding to do this work, it's actually because we have some generous donors from the private sector who give us grants through the UA Foundation. And so Northrim Bank, who is very interested in the economy of Alaska, has given ICER money to actually study economic issues. And so that allows us at times to do work that that deals with hard questions that people don't necessarily want to fund, because a lot of people assume that we have a direct line of funding from the legislature. We actually get no money from the legislature unless it's a specific question. You know, we get a contract from Legislative Budget and Audit for a particular issue. Occasionally, we got some startup money that helped us create the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research.
All right. We need to take a quick break. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the 65th anniversary of the Institute of Social and Economic Research as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today, we're discussing the Institute of Social and Economic Research's 65th anniversary. In the studio with me today are one of the past and the current directors of ICER, Fran Ulmer, who is a former lieutenant governor, former mayor, former U.S. Arctic Research Commission head, so many titles, and also former director of ICER. Diane Hirschberg is also with us, the current but outgoing director of ICER. We'll talk a little bit about that. Also a professor of education policy. And Brock Wilson, a professor of economics, is also with us, and he is at ICER as well. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Martha is in Anchorage. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Did you have a question?
I appreciate Fran Ulmer being there. I think it makes it more legit. But I just wanted to ask a question about race relations in Alaska. And I, over the years, what kinds of work have you done at the Institute? And as far as social justice, economic justice, and just a pure matter of race relations, and give us some facts, or do you have anything coming up on this topic? So I'll take the answer off the air, but I thank you for presenting this as a topic today.
Thank you for the question. All right. Martha in Anchorage was asking about studies about race relations in mm-hmm. the state.
So thank you, Martha. I actually came to Alaska through a national study of attempts to make education more equitable for those students who were least successful. And I was looking at how you eliminate tracking or ability grouping in racially mixed secondary schools. And again, this was part of a national study through my PhD. And I ended up in Southeast. That work led to a conversation about residential schooling. And that was my first big study that I got my own money for from the Ford Foundation, thanks to Paul Ongtukuk, in part, who said, you need to look at this, because it had come up in my doctoral research. And by the way, my doctoral research was looking at how policymakers in Juneau were making decisions about education for Alaska Native students. So my focus has always been around these issues that unfortunately cannot be funded right now very easily. It's been a challenge to watch that. But so we definitely, our work on residential schooling, it was the first comprehensive, and not even that comprehensive, study of residential boarding schools in Alaska. And of course, the experiences were very mixed, from the devastating, abusive, horrid experiences that happened in places like Wrangell, to the more positive experiences at a place like St. Mary's. And so we tried to have a balanced report. And I have to thank Fran Ulmer for really helping me navigate through some of that, because there was so much that had come out between what had happened in Canada and elsewhere that really allowed us to for the first time talk very clearly about the abusive side, but sometimes lose sight that for some people, the boarding schools did provide a different opportunity. But I will say, I presented it to the findings to the State Board of Education, and the next day they struck down a proposal to raise the minimum size of classrooms or of schools to 25, because that would have sent vast numbers of students back into some sort of non-optional residential schooling program. We also have been, we partnered with First Alaskans Institute when they were working on their racial justice issues. So trying to provide them with research, running focus groups, and engaging in those conversations, again, led by First Alaskans, but supported by our work. So it is a focus. We now have certainly an ongoing conversation about education funding and equity in that way. And of course, our schools are incredibly inequitable in terms of the outcomes for Indigenous students and low-income students and second language learners. And so that that comes out through that work. Or again, there's work that's kind of ICER reports, and there's the work we do individually as academics. And I've got a couple of chapters, the most recent written with Ed Alexander, who's from Fort Yukon, and with Doug Cost up at UAF, again, looking at what needs to change in our education system, because in rural Alaska, we are not succeeding. And so that's a big focus for us.
All right, thank you for that. We're going to go back to the phones here in just a moment, but I had an email question, and I doubt anyone here, well, I don't know that I'll even ask it at this point. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you had mentioned getting funds from North Rim Bank.
Yes.
And also mentioned that it's harder to get money to study anything that talks about diversity, and hopefully we'll get through that era and get back on track. But talk about how ICER accepts money from private entities or banks, and then the work that you do, what kind of control does the funder have, if any?
I think that's one of the strengths of university-based research generally, and then ICER specifically, is that we are very happy if somebody wants to have us explore a question, but we never allow them to be involved with the research process or in determining the outcomes. We are happy to share ahead of time, because sometimes we do research that has a different outcome than the funder expected. and we want to give them that heads up. We also honestly have had to at times lean on the legal department for the University of Alaska, our general counsel, to support us if we either have been given a contract that has language in it that says that we don't control the research or we don't control the outcomes. So many of us in the policy research world have done work where we know we hand in a report and it gets put on a shelf by the client. That's fine as long as we can still use that research and publish it in academic journals or present it or create a policy brief that ICER puts out. But we are very careful because we work in a space where people have passion, whether it's the mining space or the retirement system for teachers space. People get very, very passionate. And we definitely hear concerns about whether we are unbiased and whether we are independent. And of course, there's always challenges in keeping our own lenses in there. But we definitely hold each other accountable to stay unbiased and to stay independent. And thankfully, we're in an institution that supports that as well.
Yeah, we used to say you can ask the question, but you have no control over the answer.
And so yes.
And it's really important to maintain that balance. And I do remember, I won't name any names, but I do remember a couple of industry groups that wanted ICER, when I was director, to do particular research, but they would not possibly allow us to publish publicly the answer because they were afraid of what the answer might be. And we said, no, we're not taking that money and we're not doing that research. So that is a really significant difference than private economic analysis services that can be purchased from the private sector, which has a legitimate role as well, but it's not what ICER does, and it's not what universities should do.
And I think that's a very important takeaway for everyone, is that regardless of what the outcome is, ICER will publish that study, whether the funder is happy about it or not. So that is very, very important, that autonomy. And let's go back to the phones for a moment. Heather is in Anchorage. Hello.
Hi, thank you so much. Wonderful comment you just made, Fran, about research and how independent it is. I want to say thank you to Vic for hiring Lee, and I just sent Lee a note to be sure and tune in on this, either in the rebroadcast or pull it up on the podcast. He did wonderful work, but I also think you need to give some credit to Linda Leask. She was the editor. She didn't get any credit whatsoever. You never saw her name on anything. But she made the research human. She made sometimes academic-sounding things very readable to the general public. Did a spectacular job for years. Also, thanks for mentioning Scott Goldsmith and the three-legged stool, and the comment you just made about who can fund. That study came from my late husband's ability to fund it through the old ARCO. And that study is still so relevant today, more than 30 years later. And there was absolutely, ARCO, the industry could never touch it, but it became an absolutely watchword for research in the state. So just thank you so much for doing it. And Fran, thank you for all these years, even after you were there, doing the great job that you're doing for ICER.
Thanks, Heather. Good to hear from you. And you were so right about Linda Leask. Mm-hmm. She really made publications manageable for everyone to not only find interesting, but understand. She was amazing.
That is a very critical piece, too, is de-wonkifying things so that the general public can absorb that information and gain knowledge from it. Otherwise, I know I look at some research papers, you know, we're always looking at new studies and research in the newsroom, and sometimes I'll read a couple of paragraphs three times and still feel like, is it me or is this just really difficult to understand? So an editor that can clarify things and not, you know, oversimplify them, but just clarify them so that the public can take it in is really critical to helping in the way that your work is intended to do so. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about ICER's 65th anniversary today on Talk of Alaska. Before I ask this question, I wanted to ask about the research areas, Arctic communities, economy and fiscal policy, education, health, natural resources. How were those decided on? Were those the original areas? Did Dr. Rogers set that up? How is that known?
Actually, those research areas as listed are fairly recent. Certainly, I'm going to say probably the last time before the current effort that we redesigned the website, we were trying to figure out ways that you categorize. And actually, one of the things about academia is we're always struggling to figure out how to organize ourselves because that is not our specialty. And we were trying to have research groups where we could perhaps even have a lead PI who was overseeing the research. That's a whole nother conversation over coffee. But those are really just buckets that capture broadly the areas we work in because we are so interdisciplinary. And when you look at Arctic research as, you know, where my heart sits, but there's Arctic education, Arctic resource extractive industries, Arctic health issues, Arctic sustainable development. And so in some ways, all of these are intersecting, and we just want a way that people can at least think about where to look for what we're doing and who to ask the question of. And hopefully, before I am done as director, we will have a new website up that does a better job of that, not changing the buckets, but actually having more definition and clarity there. Yeah.
But you know, Lori, those really evolved over time as a reflection of what Alaskans wanted us to work on.
Yeah.
When I first became director, I created an advisory committee, just citizens from Alaska who could help us actually understand what some of the big pressing questions were. And you can't always find funding for the question that somebody has. That's a whole nother piece of the puzzle when you're working in academia. But in general, those buckets, as Diane describes them, reflect over time what Alaskans have been most concerned about, most interested in, and the major policy questions that have faced governors, legislators.
Mm-hmm. Throughout the last few decades, we live in an era of hyper-partisanship and loud opinions and skepticism. How do you ensure that your work is objective and stays above that fray? Partisans attack research they don't like all the time. When that happens, how do you defend your work without getting caught up in that fray? Brock, I'm looking right at you.
As I said earlier, my goal is always to provide objective information. I'm always relying on academic research to be able to be informed about what is working and what is not working. So that's directly the resource I rely on to think about particular problem space or policy spaces. So I think that that's, for me, what I strive to be as a good academic, to make sure that my research is objective and providing valuable insight. And I think that that's also why I joined this job. I mean, that's just kind of core to my philosophy, is to be able to provide this information so that it's not partisan, but just able to move Alaska forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really core to why I want to be here.
You had mentioned this just briefly a bit earlier, Brock, the fiscal options analysis that was recently done. ICER did a fall research project on different taxing options. Talk about how you presented this work to lawmakers, and you don't offer recommendations, correct? Just here it is.
Yeah, I mean, I first want to say, I think Brett Watson is very much the person who really took on that project. I'm very much grateful to have been on that project with him, as well as others, Spencer Perry, Mike Jones, Noah Burke. The list extends beyond that. And but everybody really came in together to help put that together.
So this was building on 2016 work.
That's right.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That Mohsin Khatabi had done.
Yes.
But then extending it. So the administration actually came to us and said, we'd like to see the 2016 report done, and we're wondering if you can do more. And we worked very closely with the chief of staff.
That's right.
Assistant chief of staff to the governor. But again, this was a perfect example of where they came with questions. And as we had different findings, the researchers presented to the staff, but there was never any, there were more questions. There was never any attempt to change what the outcomes were. It was very clearly they were just interested along the way. And they were handed a package of findings, which is exactly what was then presented to the legislature at the end of January after the governor released his fiscal plan. Mm. We spent a lot of time explaining to legislators that we had nothing to do with the governor's fiscal plan. Definitely, he looked at our information, he used it, but there's a very clear divergence from what our findings show and some of the choices made, and that's what politics is about. And we are very clear when someone says, well, what do you recommend? The answer is, that is your job as a policymaker. Our job is to make sure you have the best possible information so you can make the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Fran, as we discussed earlier, one of the research areas is Arctic communities. And one of your many past professional hats was former chair of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission from 2011 to 2020. Did you work with ICER during those years on Arctic study projects? And
you know, in some ways, I guess I would have to say the reason I ultimately was appointed by President Obama as chair of the Arctic Research Commission was in part because of the time that I spent at ICER back in 2005, because ICER's work on Arctic issues weren't not just specifically Alaska. They were pan-Arctic. The eight Arctic nations through the Arctic Council has for a couple of decades been very preoccupied with what are the similarities and the differences from one Arctic nation to another, and what are the kind of major public institutions, both universities and nonprofits, that provide the information that enable policy to be developed in the two areas that the Arctic Council concentrates on, which is sustainable development and environmental protection. So in a way, my connection to the commission goes all the way back to my early days at ICER, because there was so much work being done and had been done for years through NSF grants and other the connection with the Russian Far East that Vic Fisher worked on for many, many years. So in a way, those roots go all the way back. But yes, the commission was always looking for ways of connecting academic institutions and governments and the private sector with the kind of information that was particularly relevant and timely to decisions that needed to be made both by the public sector and the private sector in Arctic spaces. So it connects to ICER, yes.
Yes, it certainly does. My goodness. For all of you, do you sort of see ICER as research journalism? Here's the facts, folks. We're not trying to tell you how to think or what to think. We're giving you clear, fairly presented, contextualized information so you can decide. Is it sort of in that realm?
I'd never thought about those terms, but I like that concept. It really is. We actually are stranding across, excuse me, a very academic a very academic approach to the research and a very policy applied. And I would say we run the continuum. And sometimes the same project allows us to be both presenting a two-page policy brief that is going to help a policymaker make a decision, or the public to make a decision about their choice at the ballot box. We're hoping in some cases that's a good use of our information, such as fiscal options. At the same time, we want to stay relevant in our academic field. So next week, ICER is hosting a national applied policy unit conference with units like ICER from around the country. And then I hop on a plane and I go to an international Arctic conference, which is on the academic side and co-occurring with an Arctic Council event. And so I think that for us is really what makes it fun. We're not all applied. We're not all theoretical. We get to play in both sandboxes and make a difference.
Well, you sound like you're making a case to stay, not leave.
Well, I'm not leaving. I'm just not going to be an administrator because I actually miss being deeply involved in the research. I've been teaching one class a year, which has been Arctic policy, so right in that same realm. And so I get to spend a little more time thinking about what are my last few research projects and students to work with before I go to a completely different life.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. That's sort of how I became director of ICER, because I was a visiting professor of public policy at UAA, but I was seated in ICER. That's where my office was. And Scott Goldsmith, who was the director at the time, came to me one day and he said, you know, I really want to get back to research. I'm done with this. Would you possibly be willing to take over the director position? Because I want to do research again. And he went back and did great research. So, you know, that worked out. So this is not an unusual event, actually, that the person who all of a sudden is freed up from the administrative stuff and the public outreach stuff and the, you know, who actually wants to do the research again. So Diana's following in the footsteps of others who have preceded her.
Brock, we've got about a minute left here, and I know there's a celebration coming up at the museum later this week. Is that right?
Yes, actually, next Tuesday is our celebration of ICER's 65th at the Anchorage Museum. Tonight, we are being honored by the Anchorage Assembly.
Okay. Brock, your thoughts about what you'd like to see going forward?
I think, honestly, ICER's, you know, what it's done and what it's continuing to do has been so impactful in the state. And for me, that's exciting, and that's what brought me here. And so for us to continue to keep doing that and providing that research, I think is really important broadly. So this is me looking forward to the next 65 years of great ICER research.
All right. Well, I will trust you on that because I don't think I'm going to be around for it, but you might be. All right. Thanks so much to our guests, Fran Ulmer, Diane Hirschberg, and Brock Wilson, all affiliated with currently or in the past with the Institute of Social and Economic Research. Thanks to our team on the board. Our engineer is Crystal Hyde. Our producer is Ava White today. Our editor was Liz Ruskin. And on the phones, Michaela Finnerty helped us out. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.